welcome to Travel Fun. My name is Mary Beth Clementi, and I am the host of this talk show on travel. And as is the tradition, I am doing a special April in Paris program. I think since I started Travel Fun 8 years ago, every April, I do April in Paris, and I was determined to hit it once again this time. Many of you know I am a real Francophile. I actually lived in Paris myself 11 years and wrote 4 books on France, 3 of them on Paris. So I love talking about France and Paris in particular. And I've called on an expert who is on the line in Paris, and I am going to be chatting with Terence Galenter. And Terence has a wonderful website, blog, service called ParisExpat.com. There's a hyphen in between. And basically, it's Paris through expatriate eyes. And I thought Terence would be a terrific guest to have on this special April in Paris program. I would like to welcome Terence Galenter to Travel Fun. Hi, Terence.
Hi, Mary Beth. Great to hear your voice again. It's been a while since we had that lunch in Paris at the Bristol and celebrated the update of your book, The Riches of Paris.
It certainly has. I've been in my Western mode. And I have to say, still, though, every spring, I think my longing for Paris grows because I really do think it's not just a cliche that spring is the best time to be in Paris, actually in most of Europe, because spring arrives early, you have lots of flowers blooming and the trees are out and it's just fresh and beautiful. Do you agree?
It's all of that, but it's also a little schizophrenic. The Aznavour sang a song called Paris is at its best in May, which is the reality. Today is a perfect April day, unlike the song. It was raining, it was cold, but now the sun has broken out at 6:30 here in Paris and streaming in through the skylight of my La Boheme apartment with heat. And as you say, the flowers are beginning to bloom, and by the beginning of May, it really becomes beautiful. But there are no bad days in Paris. It's just a different level of interest.
Exactly. And I always say that if you haven't experienced Paris on a gray day, you have not experienced Paris.
Well, it's a test of true love. to be able to love Paris when it's gray, like in an Otrio painting. The good news is the sun comes out, and as you said, the flowers are beginning to bloom, and you can feel the anticipation of being able to sit outside in cafes and just leisurely enjoy the day and enjoy the breathtaking beauty of the city.
So, Terence, tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been an expat in Paris?
Well, I've been here for about 4 years now. I basically evacuated, if you will. I consider myself an evacuee, having left America, not entirely, but I'm mostly here. It's something that had been calling me for an enormous period of time, and I finally just decided I didn't want to die or turn 70 or something like that and not have lived in Paris. So I packed up and came, and I don't look back. I come back to the States a few times a year for business, to New York a little bit, and then in California to see my grandchildren, my son, and old friends. But Paris, for me, makes me feel younger every day. The clock's going backwards and not forward since I'm here.
And why is that? Why does it make you feel young and alive?
It's it's in a sense, it's that I feel very much at home here. You know, I think that, you know, apparently, you know, your Paris to some degree is Telluride. Someone else's might be Toledo, Ohio, if that's possible to imagine. But this is a place that fits. It's a place that allows me to be me. It's a place that allows me to enjoy a wide variety of things that I do enjoy with a very diverse a mixture of people from all around the world. And that's what I think is most appealing to me. It's a very humane city, a very human scale of life. It slows down enough for you to really soak it up and enjoy it. You know, and I think that I could tell you a thousand reasons. I may tell you a few as to why I love it, but I think that ultimately, it's because, and again, I'll quote the Johnny Mathis without singing on the air, but it's what I feel here. It's like being in love with someone. I'm better when I'm in Paris than I'm somewhere else.
And I do think that an awful lot of it does have to do with the pace, the quality of life, taking time to have a long, leisurely lunch, sitting down, having a coffee, and being able to stay in a cafe for an hour or two and having nobody hustle you off. And
I think, you know, in America, but, you know, if we look at New York and then the rest of America, in New York, we're moving, I liken it to a 45 RPM record as opposed to a 33 for those of us who are old enough to remember when we had vinyl. Things are moving almost too quickly for you to slow down and grab something. And in other parts of the country, you're in your car all the time, so you don't really have an opportunity to connect. But today, just walking back from a meeting, some friends were here from Denmark, who I know from California, ran into a friend on the street who was hustling off in the rain to see a movie. And it just seems that you're constantly running into people. It's a very, very small town for a big town. And once you've planted yourself here and begun to make friends and adapt to the way of life, you're rarely alone. You can meet people at almost any given moment and at least stop for a coffee or a little break on the street and a little chit-chat.
Terrence, have you been a Francophile your whole life?
Well, have you read my memoir, Le Paris par hasard?
No, not yet.
We'll have to
dommage.
Read it. But I would say that not entirely. I first came to Paris in 1974. Another one of those times when I was predicting my death. I was 27, and I had to come to Paris before I died. I had about $600 in the bank when I came back. But I survived, and I did it, and I felt very Hemingway. I'd read Sun Also Rises and all of that fiction about Paris. But then later, after I was married and divorced in the middle of the 90s, in my mid to late 40s, I came back, and there's something about coming to Paris as an adult that is quite different than what you felt when you came here when you were very young. There's a certain, you bring a certain aspect of having lived to the experience yourself, and then when you're here, it just becomes richer. And it just seemed like I was, in a way, I was in practice, in training, to be able to come to Paris and really absorb it and enjoy it. And that's been my experience since I've been here, that it has not failed me. It's perhaps been a richer experience than I imagined.
I think that's a terrific way to look at it. And although I might add, I think there are different moments in your life when Paris is right for you.
Oh.
The 11 years I spent there, I was a young adult, and I feel that my whole Paris experience formed me and sort of made me the person I am. So I guess any age is a good age to go to Paris.
Oh, absolutely.
Now,
just make sure you come.
Talk about, you are involved with many things. First of all, I would like to say, I think it's pretty accurate to define you maybe as an American bon vivant in Paris.
I can accept that characterization.
Okay, great. I'm sure people have gathered that already. But and I think it's terrific. People can go to Paris and actually experience Paris with you.
Well, the idea of Paris through expatriate eyes, which has evolved from when I started this in California 10 years ago, was, I think, a lot of people are intimidated because they don't speak French, or they have these memories of the French being rude, which goes back to our experience here in the aftermath of the Second World War, some of it that we deserved. And so they were a little bit frightened by it. What I tried to do, in a sense, was to interpret it, to present it to someone in my American, periodically Brooklyn kind of sensibility, that would demystify it and enable them to come, to learn, to enjoy, not be intimidated, and ultimately even teach me. So when I do my walk, Paris au Flaneur, What I really encourage is people to respond to what we're looking at, the architecture, the people. Their commentary is very important. I don't try to be a pedagogue. And I want them to be. I want them to come back to me a week later and say, "Oh, gee, thank you. I found this great restaurant buried in an impasse because you taught me how to look. You didn't tell me where to go. You taught me how to find it." And I like people to be able to let the city come to them, because there are many Parises. There's your Paris. There's my Paris. There's our friend Susan Rosenberg's Paris. Sometimes there's an overlap. But a lot of it's individual, and a lot of it's what we want to make of it and what we're capable of making of it. And I think that when people come, if they're coming for the first time, they should read a little bit about it, understand a little bit about the history, and come and be prepared to enjoy, not expect it just to happen to them, to kind of meet it, halfway, if you will.
Right. So your Paris au flâneur is about strolling around Paris and experiencing it as a Parisian would.
Well, yeah, I have there's an itinerary to it, because it is a walk, but I don't stop and tell you that something happened in 1733 at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I may tell you in 1774 at 2 o'clock in the afternoon somebody was making love to someone on the third floor of that building, because that's infinitely more interesting, I would think, to an audience, because they're going to forget dates and specifics over time. But if I can let them understand the context in which something happened. For example, Pei's Pyramid that went up in 1989 in the courtyard of the Louvre to celebrate the bicentennial of the French Revolution was really frowned upon when it opened. But here he took a 5,000-year-old piece of architecture, clad it in 20th-century materials, dropped it in the middle of a 17th-century courtyard, and after people got over the shock, attendance at the Louvre has risen from, at that point, about 2 million to 10 million visitors a year. And it's so, in a sense, it's become a destination. It's become a place that people use as a place to meet before they go somewhere else. And I think that's very much what Paris understands, is how to take a city and make it very livable, scale it in a human way, save what exists, and then add to it, but not destroy it. In America, we have a tendency to build cities to accommodate shopping centers. Here, nothing is thrown away. You look up and see a building, it'll say charcuterie, but on the bottom they're selling beautiful silk dresses. So it's nothing is thrown away, just like nothing is thrown away in their diet. They eat everything, everything you can possibly imagine, and things you may not even want to imagine, that they create wonderful meals out of. Leftovers become an art.
And I think also one of the reasons why Paris is such a livable city and such an enjoyable place to visit is all of the gardens you find there.
Oh, absolutely. Lots of gardens. And the very obvious places that we know about, the Jardin de Luxembourg, but there are many others. I mean, my personal favorite is the gardens of the Palais Royal, because it's situated between the hustle and bustle of the Rue de Rivoli and the area up around the Bibliothèque Nationale, and it's very quiet, it's very intimate. I will often, if I'm around and doing business, I will stop with take out a paper, do the New York Times crossword puzzle in the Tribune, or read a little bit from a book, and just enjoy and soak in the flowers and the beauty and the tranquility. And there's a book that's just coming out by Susan Cahill called Hidden Gardens of Paris. It'll be out very, very shortly, I believe, in May. All about the any number of gardens and green spots that we don't necessarily know, with beautiful photography in it. So it's Susan Cahill, Hidden Gardens of Paris.
And I think we can add there that you have some terrific recommendations for books and reading, and really on a constant basis on your website.
Mm-hmm.
And that's paris-expat.com.
Right, there is the Paris bookstore, and what I've tried to do is list and offer some commentary on the books that I find to be the canon, things like Waverly Roots, The Food of France, that describes French cooking regionally. Dairy products in the north and butter in Normandy. In the southwest, it's goose fat. And of course, in Provence, it's the olive oil, the very powerful Italian influence. Books like that, books like The Last Time I Saw Paris by Eliot Paul, and the obvious Hemingway material, but things like Memoir of Montparnasse, which is not quite as well known. And these, in a way, have kind of formed what I would call the canon of literature about Paris. There seems to be no limit to the ways in which the title Paris can be invoked in a book. I recall a book a few years ago called From Here You Can't See Paris. So it's there's a magic to the use of the word. And I think that much of certainly American expat literature, it comes from here. And the people have come here and been inspired by the city, and it gives them so much to write about and so much history.
I am visiting with Terence Galinter, and we are, of course, talking about Paris. We're going to take a short break, give us the opportunity to listen to some French music. Terence, we'll be right back.
J'ai mangé de l'autocar avec ses jantes, avec ses phares. Ensuite j'ai fumé une berline, pures essences raffinées de benzine. Paris, j'aime ton gasoil, l'odeur de ton excitation moteur. Paris, tu es la capitale, la lettre P en sonneur initiale. Car tu sens si bon l'été sous ta chape de plomb soufrée, que j'ai l'inspiration fatale. Tu seras même autant des pics qui goudronnent tes monuments et font pleurer tous les yeux des amants.
Hello, and welcome back to Travel Fun. This is a special April in Paris program, and I am visiting with Terence Galinter. And Terence, I refer to Terence as the American bon vivant in Paris, and he agrees with that.
Terence doesn't argue.
Yes, and Terence does all kinds of things. He conducts tours, he arranges stays, accommodations, transportation, restaurants. He's kind of the man to know, your point person in Paris. And today we're just sort of having fun schmoozing about Paris together, especially since I live there for 11 years, and it's very dear to my heart. During the break, Terence, you told me a little bit that you have launched your singing career in Paris. Tell me more.
Well, there's a wonderful club at the West, club, a bar at the Westminster Hotel called the Duke's Bar.
I love it. We seat about 30, counting the
bar stools. I have a terrific piano player, and occasionally I'm visited by a wonderful cornet player, Dick Miller. And I sing pretty much the Tony Bennett songbook. I love that style of almost of crooning. I will drop in the odd Sinatra, although I'm a much bigger Tony Bennett fan, and he really informs my repertoire, and occasionally things by Charles Trenet, which have been huge successes in America. And I'm thinking of Que Reste-t-il, which we know from Lenny Welch's I Wish You Love. And it's I generally do two sets every Thursday night, the best club sandwich in Paris, and possibly the biggest club sandwich in Paris. Take you all night to eat it, or you can share it with a partner. But it's been something that I've always loved to sing, and it's always been great fun for me. And it just kind of evolved that I had this opportunity to, we did a little 4-week test, which is now mushroomed into 3 months, and which should continue. And I'm looking at other venues as well. But for me, it's just a place to have a really good time and allow my guests and my friends and my new friends a place to see me. Visit with me, schmooze, as you say, as the French would say. And that's one of the places I like to meet. But I've also been somewhat adopted by the café floor. You know, in Paris, one is either a fleuriste or a magoiste. And at one time, I used to hang at the De Mago. But I found since I've come back to stay, that the floor is a better place for me. I'm more comfortable. And I generally, from 11:30 to 1 o'clock on Sundays, with the odd exception, you can find me there. So if your listeners are in Paris, if they don't recognize me, they can just go to Francis, the day manager, and he will point me out. And I'm generally surrounded by a handful of my pals here, writers and just good friends, and whoever's in town. On any given day, there may be someone from San Francisco, from New York, from Australia, and I like to introduce people so that they make friends, and we wind up doing things together over the course of the week. But it's very, very informal, very relaxed.
It sounds sort of like a modern-day salon.
In a way, it is, without having the privacy of being in someone's home. I like to think that, you know, inside you will see some famous French writers and filmmakers, but outside on the terrace, the inside terrace is basically it's my office. Armani spends probably $300,000 or euros a year in rent across the street. And I spend about 25 euros a month in coffee, and we have the same Saint-Germain address.
That's fantastic. And, of course, that's the renowned Café de Flore. And in case people didn't hear, where Terrence goes to sing on Thursday nights in Paris is the bar at the Hotel Westminster. And that is a wonderful place. It's a wonderful property.
Yeah, right near the opera. It's between the Place Vendôme. It's 13 or 13 Rue de la Paix. And no cover, no minimum. And as I said, the show starts about 9:15, and we'll do two shows. And we're there as late as midnight. If there's enough of a crowd around, then we'll just extend it and perhaps take a few requests from the house. And I like the first set to be a little bit like a concert, a little more structured, and then the second set we just let it go. Have fun and get the audience involved in it. And kind of a little bit like, in a way, what Bobby Short did at the Café Carlisle is what I really want to strive for. I just want people to know that if they're in town, it's a Thursday night, just come, say hello to Terrence, have a drink, meet some people, be introduced to some people, and good place to connect.
Terrific. Now, Terrence, what's the mood like in Paris these days?
We have an election coming up. So this Sunday is the first round. You know, the French elections always go in two rounds. So you have the fringe, you have the lunatic fringe, if you will, Marianne Le Pen, the daughter of Jean-Marie. So no one gets elected on the first round. And it's very, very tight between Hollande from the Socialists and Sarkozy, the incumbent. And it's a pivotal election. There's a lot of anxiety about what will come out of this, you know, either way. Sarkozy was really down in the polls. He's had a meteoric rise back up. But it's on everyone's lips, and everyone is anxious about what will happen, because a lot of what will happen economically in Europe will, and certainly in France, will derive from the result of this election. So and then on the 6th of May we have the runoff.
Right, and so how has the economy been these past months in Paris?
Well, I've noticed, you know, more Americans coming back. I don't know what, you know, how to define why. I mean, to some degree, I think, you know, we had our huge crisis 4 years ago, almost coincident with my arrival in Paris. Thank you. But to some degree, I guess people have learned how to accept the fact that nothing will be the same again. You know, we have that going on. You have the what's happened in the internet world. You have major big box retailers having a very difficult time surviving, and the world is in transition. The book industry is in transition. The music industry has already gone through that transition. So the kinds of things that would generally take generations to change in our childhood are happening almost overnight. And I think people are learning how to somehow accept the fact that things will move at the speed of light. and we can't slow it down. So I think they're figuring out some way to adapt to it. And I think they're saying, hey, you know, I'm going to come to Paris. I'm going to take that trip. I'm not going to anticipate what's going to happen 2 years from now. I can afford it now. I'm going to go take it. I'm going to go enjoy it, and whether it be Paris or Italy or whatever someone's Paris happens to be. So I think that people are they're doing that. I mean, I've seen a lot of people recently, and I don't think it was quite this busy a year ago.
And as the expression goes, we will always have Paris.
Well, I'm here. I have it.
No, or there will always be Paris.
As the expression goes and as the film goes. I mean, I think that, you know, if you've been here, you will carry that with you forever. As Hemingway says, it is a movable feast, but I think it's indelible. And and you take it back to San Francisco or Telluride or Denver or whatever. Part of the beauty of coming here, if you can't stay here, it's not designed for everyone, is that you learn something about the way in which you can live a more relaxed, I think, a more pleasurable life. And hopefully people would come learn that about learning how to slow life down a little bit, and then take that back to their hometown and incorporate some of what they've learned into their daily living.
And I do think that it's an incredibly romantic city. And having said that, it doesn't mean you have to go there with a lover. You can go there single and enjoy
absolutely.
The romance
and
just
find
as
a
much.
Lover. Or not.
Or just enjoy taking in the scene. I think romance, in terms of the whole sensuality of the experience, of the senses, the visually and the sounds and the smells at the markets, and it really is a place to stimulate all of your senses.
Well, very much so. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I think that American women find when they come here is that there is a... This is a place where you don't have to be 25 years old to be considered sexy and desirable. If I'm sitting next to a 75-year-old woman, which is not that far from my age these days, at a cafe, she probably smells beautiful because she has her favorite fragrance on. She's wearing a beautiful scarf. She's elegantly dressed. She's not running around in a sweatshirt and a pair of jeans. And she feels sexy and vibrant and beautiful. She doesn't put an age on herself. And she's confident and interesting, and that aspect is out there, and I think that people see that and grasp that. There's when you walk out, you have an obligation to yourself and to the public to present yourself in the best possible way, because this is a city that appreciates art and appreciates beauty, and you are an extension of that. So there's no excuse to not make the best effort to be the best possible you. Not every woman looks like Catherine Deneuve, but every woman has her own style and charm and beauty. And she needs to represent it. And here it's appreciated by men of all ages.
You know, I agree with that. There's no real age limit to beauty in France. And in fact, older people are, I think, more revered.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they are revered. Exactly the word. They're valued. You know, there's a... I mean, for me, for example, not just speaking of older women, but if I'm sitting having a conversation with an 80-year-old man who's survived the occupation, there are thousands of questions I want to ask him, and I will ask him, learning about what life was like, what it was like for him personally, what it was like for his family. You know, an opportunity to touch history, to talk to history, you know, is here. And as I'm sure as you find, we find this in America also, whenever we've met someone who has so much to give and so few people allow them the opportunity to share it, they gush at us. And here it's everywhere. People love to be able to talk about intelligent things, not about how much money they made last week, the price of their house, the size of the car they're going to buy. There isn't this devotion to money and things. You know, people appreciate you for who you are as opposed to what you have.
And Terrace, I'm sure a lot of this you talk about and reveal in your book, Paris par hasard, your memoir. And of course, there's an overview of that on your website. And once again, the website is Paris expat.com. And check it out if you're thinking about a trip to Paris. Look up Terrence and take a tour, meet with him. Terrence, it's been delightful chatting with you. I am going to post this interview as a podcast on my blog.
Bonjour. And I will do the same at mine once I get it.
Right. BonjourColorado.com. I have a lot of Francophiles who check that out. And enjoy springtime in Paris. And thank you for being a guest on Travel Fun.
Well, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you here in Paris.
Take care. A bientôt, alors.
A bientôt. Merci bien. Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Come fly with me. Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay.
Come on, fly with me. We'll float down